Okay. We have a golden opportunity this Shabbat. The last time it happened was 20 years ago, that Parshat Miketz was not on Chanukah. So normally, Parshat Miketz on Chanukah, on the Haftarah, is not related to Miketz. It's related to Chanukah. It's the Zachari thing. And that we read last week in Vayeshev. And it can only happen when Hanukkah starts on a Friday, and it can only happen with a bunch of other conditions in the year. And so this is how it's played out. Hanukkah will end on Friday. Shabbat will be not Hanukkah. And Shabbat Miketz has its own Haftarah. I want to do two very simple things with you over the course of the next 25 minutes or so. One of them is to read through the Haftarah and figure out what it means, because the Haftarah is a riddle. Right? And it's a very famous story. It's the story of the two women who come to Shlomo with the baby, the dead baby, etc. And they fight over whose baby it is. And Shlomo says, bring out the sword. We all know the story. But the mystery, the riddle is, like, well, how did Shlomo figure out how to do this? How did he trap the wrong mother to saying what she did and get the right mother to say what she did so that he could find it out? That's part one. Part two, which is just going to come along the way, is to say, why is this the Haftarah of Miketz? That's a question that doesn't get asked very often because, again, the Haftarah happens rarely. I have a friend who's over 60 who said he's read this Haftarah, I think, three times since his bar mitzvah, and he gets it every time it comes around. I even had reason to want to read it this week, but I relinquished it. I said, you don't get this too often. You get it this week. That's fine. Okay, so let's take a look at the Haftarah, the setting, which is in the smaller print, rather than hoping it's translated on the back, also smaller and bigger. The setting of this story is in the first two chapters of Sefer Melachim, essentially is the establishment of Shlomo as the proper heir. Chapter one has the whole attempt by Adoniah to take over, and David on his deathbed says Shlomo will take over, and Shlomo is anointed during David's lifetime, something relatively unheard of. And then in chapter two, David gives his last will and testament and dies. And Shlomo then goes through doing a lot of things to set the kingdom up. And those two are the Haftarot of Chayesar, which we had a few weeks ago, and Vayechi, which is coming up in a few weeks. And chapter three is after Shlomo has been firmly kind of ensconced in his position. He goes to Givon. Givon is near Givat Ze'ev, if that gives you a sense. And there was a site of the temporary Mishkan thing there. And Shlomo brought Korbanot, and he had a vision. And in the vision, God came to him and said, what do you want? And Shlomo says, I want wisdom to be able to lead your people. And God then says to him, you didn't ask for riches. You didn't ask for your enemies' heads on a stick, etc. So I'm going to give, and I'm very happy you asked for wisdom. It's a great request. I'm going to give it to you, and you'll get all the other stuff too. Okay, so Shlomo wakes up from this, and the first pasuk of the Haftarah is actually in Tetvav, but the story starts here. And the story is clearly intended to exemplify that wish was given, that Shlomo was given this amazing wisdom, and so that he would be able to lead his people. And the end of the Haftarah, and we actually read the next pasuk, which is this, but the pasuk previous is Vayishmu kol Yisrael tamishpat asher shavat ha-melech in purple, Vayirum ne ha-melech ki ra'u ki chochmat elim bekibo v'asot mishpat, Vayimelech Shlomo melech kol Yisrael. And so this is sort of the transition from Shlomo being formally the king to Shlomo being actually the king. And the people all accept him, and they fear him, and they see he's brilliant, and they don't want to mess with him. And so he's firmly. So now we got to see what this story is. Now, at first glance, before looking into the story, there's an obvious connection to the Parsha, because Miketz is about Yosef's wisdom and Yosef's ability to kind of see, envision the future, interpret the dreams, understand how to do things, and really lead the country with wisdom. And so that seems to be what this is about. But there's a whole other thing going on, which we'll discover towards the end of this story. Let's read the story. And again, the question that's lurking in our mind, because we all know how the story plays out, is how did Shlomo get the woman to admit, the women to kind of open up? Because the minute that one woman says, no, spare him rather than kill him, and the other one doesn't say the same thing, right away you know who the real mother is. So let's see the story. Now, I've highlighted words and phrases that I think are key to understanding the story. So we want to listen to this through Shlomo's ears and pay attention to what the text points out. Az tavona shta, and again, the translation is, if you have the handout, the translation is under here. Az tavona shtaim nashim zonot el hamelech. So the first thing we hear is two women who are prostitutes come to the king. Now, just to clarify something, it should not be so strange to have women of ill repute, or whatever you want to call them, streetwalkers, walking into the king. And it shouldn't be strange on two levels. First of all, as we see in the story of Rachav, an isha zona is not necessarily the way that we would think about a woman of ill repute. She might have had a position in the community, they might have all known who she was, and then didn't necessarily seem to be such a terrible thing. That's first of all. The fact that they could come to the king and not hide their identity sort of shows that. The second thing is that the king was far more accessible than our leaders are today. We find countless examples in Tanakh, especially with Malchei Yehuda, but also with Malchei Yisrael, and also with foreign kings, where regular individuals come, fall at their feet in public, and there seemed to be a time when the kings made themselves available and they would take personal requests. And if you caught them at the right time and your tears were sincere enough and your complaint was legit, then very likely you would get not only hearing, but maybe some protection. We see it throughout the story of the woman from Tekoa who comes to the king when she's trying to convince him not to banish Avshalom. And she comes up with her whole story about her two sons. All right, other examples like that. The woman who comes to the Melech Yisrael to beg for her land back after she left the land, the Elisha, the meat. All right, so this is not so strange. But the fact is that the text identifies them as Zonot, which is key to the story. Now, they don't say Vatomer HaZonaha Achat because it's about two women. But the fact that there's Zonot is critical. Now, the fact that there's Zonot is not repeated here. So it's not part of their identity, but what they do for a living is critical to understanding the story. Okay. And Shlomo evidently knows there's Zonot because the text is telling us that. But Tomer Ha'isha Ha'chat Bi'aduni. So woman A, and we'll call her woman A, but actually we will call her the plaintiff. She's the accuser. She comes forward and says, please, I beg your pardon. Ani v'ha'isha zot. I am the defendant. Yoshvot b'vayit echad. Now notice what she says. We live in one house. This is not just circumstantial. This is actually part of the argument. And you'll see why I'm getting so tight about all of each word, because each of the words that's spoken by the women here is critical. And the text actually tells us that a little later on. Va'ileid ima v'bayit. So the two of us live in one house. So now what kind of house is this? It's a house of Znut. And I gave birth with her in the house, meaning I gave birth, I was pregnant, I gave birth, and she was in the house. Now, for a zonah to give birth is probably not good for business. I'm not going to concern myself now with who the father is. We have no idea who the father is. That doesn't matter for this story. But it's probably not good for business. Vayhi bayom ha'shlishi lelidti, so on the third day since I gave birth, vatelet gam ha'isha hazot, she also gave birth. So you've got these two very pregnant prostitutes in a house together. One gives birth, that's the accuser, the plaintiff. And 3 days later, the defendant also gave birth. Va'anachnu yachdav, ein zar itanu b'bayit. The two of us are together and there is no stranger there. Now, part of the reason she's saying that is that there is no eyewitness to what I'm about to claim. So I can't bring witnesses in to say who did what. All right, so that's part of what the reason she's saying it. But there's something more subtle going on, which is these are two zonot in a house together and there's nobody else there. Zonot only can subsist if there are other people coming in. They depend on business and nobody's there. Okay, and this is actually going to be part of the argument. Zolatish time and achobai, just the two of us. And now, this is the accuser's claim. the defendant, her son died at night. And then she says, Asher Shachva Alav. Now, the simple way that that's read, and it's probably read this way generically, is that she rolled over on the baby, some terrible tragedy happened, and Nevach, she killed the baby, right? Vatakom betoch halayla, we're going to come back to that phrase, Vatakom betoch halayla, she, so again, this is all one woman speaking, the plaintiff, she accuses, she's the accuser, says, she, the defendant, Vatakom betoch halayla, she got up in the middle of the night, Vatikach et bni meyatzli, she took my son from me, Va'amatcha yishena, I was sleeping, which, by the way, raises the question. You're admitting that you were sleeping, so how do you know what she did? She's not saying, I'm telling you what I saw her do. I'm telling you what I'm reconstructing what happened. I was sleeping. She lay my baby down in her crook, the crook of her arm. And then she took her dead baby and put it in my crook, which means she switched the babies. So she says two things happened. Her own baby died, and then she switched the babies. That's her claim. Of course, the defendant, when she gets her chance, is going to say, no, I didn't do anything of the sort. Your baby died, the one that's in your arms, and this one is my living baby. Right. Again, I got up in the morning. And I got up in the morning in order to nurse my child. And I looked at him, and he was dead. So it sounds like she got up early in the morning when it was too dark and to nurse him and he was dead. She probably freaked out. And then, seems to be when it was lighter, I looked at him carefully. It wasn't my son. I looked at him carefully. It wasn't my son. Some features that only a mother could recognize. But, okay, now, that's her claim. So her claim basically is this woman is holding on to my live child and the one that was in my arms this morning is her dead child. And she swapped them because she wanted a live child. Okay. Now the defendant speaks up. And to make it clear, I put her words in red, the other woman in yellow. I didn't want to put blue because I don't want to get political. So the other woman, the defendant says, Lochi bni hachai uvnech hamet. So what does she say? My son is the living one, meaning the one I'm holding on to, the living one is mine. Your son, the one you got with you, is the one who's dead, is your son. Vizoto merit lochi, back to the accuser. Bnei hamet uvnei hachai. She says, no, your son is the dead one, meaning the one I have who's dead is really yours. Uvnei hachai, the one that's alive that you're holding onto is really mine. And then this key phrase that really opens the door to everything is vatzdaber na lifnei hamelech. And they spoke before the king. Now, at this point, I want to do some important methodology, which will involve that phrase. Whenever you read a conversation in Tanakh, you are reading one of two things, and each one of them is one of two things. Shtayim Shein Arba. You are either reading a transcription of the conversation, or you're reading a paraphrase of the conversation. Right? So when the Malachim said to Avram, Aye Sarai Ishtecha, did they say Aye Sarai Ishtecha or did they say Efo Sarai Ishtecha? I don't know if I'm getting the exact words they used or if they said it differently and the text reported it that way. I don't know. The second split is, of course, one that's not germane to us, which is, like in Megillat Esther, whenever I'm reading a conversation, I'm not reading a transcription because I'm reading a translation. Because there are no two Hebrew speakers that speak to each other, Megillat Esther, as an example. So I can't be reading the original. So the question is now, is it a transcription of a translation or a transcription of a paraphrase? Okay, but that's not my concern. My concern is simply within the world of Hebrew. Am I reading a transcription or a paraphrase? Why do I care? I care a lot. Because if I'm reading a paraphrase, I cannot look at the specific words to figure out what's going on. Because the point of a paraphrase is to give me a general idea of what's being expressed. If on the other hand, I'm looking at it as a transcription, then I'm going to look at each word, and each word may be a clue into helping me see what's going on. Now, these three words that are shaded, tell me that all the words before this are exact. In other words, the text says, she says A and she says B, and then they talked. So the "and then they talked" tells me then there were other words they said, and that means these are the exact words. And you see it because what's the next pasuk? I mean, Shlomo here is going to confirm this piece of methodology. V'yomer melech zot omeret ze b'nei achai u'b'nei chameit. V'zot omeret lochi b'nei chameit u'b'nei achai. He repeats their words verbatim. And you notice that just like the women swapped the order of their phrases, Shlomo did the same thing. The woman in red, no relation to the movie, said, "B'ni ha'chai uvnech hamet." Right? And the other one says, "B'ni hamet uvni ha'chai." Now, by the way, they're both saying the same thing, which is, my son is the living son, and your son's a dead son. But one of them started with the living son and ended with the dead son. My son, the living son is mine, and the dead son is yours. And the other one started with the dead son is yours, and the living son is mine. And Shlomo repeats it and does the same flip, which means there's something in that flip that is a clue to what's going on. And by the way, from here on in, it's all downhill because Shlomo has the solution. So let's see what's going on.
But in Pasuk Chof Beis, it appears that the second woman is talking to the first woman, not to Shlomo.
Right. They're right. Shlomo's listening. They're standing in front of Shlomo.
But up to that point, it's the first woman speaking to Shlomo, no?
It's the first woman speaking in to Shlomo, but with the woman there, but she's looking at the accusation of this woman did this, and then she the defendant turns to the accuser and talks to her in front of Shlomo, correct?
Right.
And says, "No, you got it wrong. The baby I'm holding, the baby that's alive, is mine. The one I'm holding, it's alive, is mine. And the dead one you got, that's your baby."
But what did Shlomo reverse? He's only saying back what they said. He didn't change their order.
Exactly. He stuck to their flipped order. You notice that.
Yeah, I understand that. He just repeated them. Okay.
He repeated it, but notice he did not. He did not go with an easier thing, which is Zotomeret b'ni achai u'b'nei chameit, v'zotomeret b'ni achai u'b'nei chameit, which would be the easy way to do it. The easy way to do it would be to say they each have the same, they're saying the same thing. And basically, the way most people read this story is, this one says it's hers and this one says it's hers. What should I do? I'll take a sword. But Shlomo's way smarter than that. Shlomo says, I'm listening to this woman, and one woman who's the accused, the one who's right now holding onto a living baby, but she's accused of swapping. In her counter, when she looks at her opposite number, she says, the living baby's mine and the dead baby's yours. And Shlomo reasons as follows. He reasons that when you have a claim to make, the main emphasis on the claim is what you claim last, what you want the judge to hear, the words you want to hear ringing. So the first, the second woman, the woman in red, the accused, who responds, she says, the living child is mine and the dead one is yours. Her main focus is on the dead one. Now, this alone is not enough, but there's more to it. And the other one, the one in yellow, who's the original accuser, says, your child is the dead one and mine's the living one. Her focus is on the living child. And Shlomo repeats it because Shlomo is listening to these words carefully. Now let's roll back and let's see what's happening. We find out that these women are zonot, right? And that they're both pregnant, which probably wasn't planned or whatever. It's not good for business. They're in the house. They're alone in the house. So the woman is building up this entire case. Now, on the surface level, it's saying, I don't know about eyewitnesses. On a deeper level, it's saying business was suffering. What happened? We gave birth. Now, what happened? Vayamot ben Aisha zot laila. The accuser's argument is that the dead baby is the other woman's baby, and then she swapped them. How did the baby die? Asher shachva alav. Don't read this the way I had it before, which is that Nebuch, she turned over and, she smothered a baby. Why did she smother the baby? Because business is bad. We can't have babies around here. She gave birth, and now she wants to kill the baby. Which means, what's her next piece of the claim? She switched the babies so that the dead baby is now with me. My live baby is with her. And what's she going to do a few nights from now? she'll have another accident, with air quotes, and both babies will be gone. And Shlomo hears this, and it's really the only way to explain what happens next. So Shlomo understands that the accusation of the woman in yellow, the one who currently holds a dead baby, that her accusation is that this was not an accident. The first baby who died, which is not mine, was smothered to death by the mother. The mother then swapped the babies, and now some night from tonight, tomorrow night, next night, she's going to do the same thing to my baby. And the other woman makes her claim, says, no, no, the living baby's mine, that baby's yours. Okay, now watch what Shlomo does. Shlomo says, take a sword. Now, by the way, when you ask most people how this story plays out, Shlomo says, take the sword and cut the baby in half. Now, without looking at the text, what do most people think happens next? When Shlomo says, cut the baby in half and each give half to each woman, what do we think happens?
One says no, one says yes.
What, right, so, but most people actually don't get that far. Most people think one woman speaks up and says, no, 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 don't cut him in half, give him to the other woman, and the other woman doesn't say anything. That's how most people picture the story. But you're right, Robert. Take the living baby and cut him in two. Give each one a half. Divide it in half. So the woman who we really know is the mother of the living child, because her mercy, her compassion for her son overcame her. By the way, that's the other hook to the parsha. At the end of the parsha, this is what happens. Compassion for Binyamin overcomes Yosef. Compassion for Binyamin overcomes Yehuda. And at the beginning of next week's parsha, compassion for Yaakov overcomes Yosef. Human compassion overcomes an attempt to at this plot. But what happens here, the woman is overcome by compassion. She says, the accuser says, let her keep the baby. Now, why would she say that? Because if Shlomo cuts the baby in half, the baby's dead. That's it. If, on the other hand, Shlomo gives this woman the baby, maybe she can steal the baby away. Maybe as long as there's breath, there's hope. So she wants to at least delay this baby dying. And here's where the real surprise comes out. The other one says, no, you know what? Neither one of us should have him. Cut him in half. Now, by the way, it's such a bizarre thing if you think about it. On a surface level, the way we think about it, the way we think about the story is Nebuch, one woman had an accident, the baby died. She was grief-stricken. She swapped babies. Now she wants to keep this baby. But if that's the case, why would she say, you know what, Shlomo, go ahead and cut him in half? That's nuts. How did Shlomo know he was going to get it open? By the way, the minute she opens her mouth like that, the game's over. The baby is taken from her, given to the other woman, and who knows what happens to this woman. How did Shlomo know she was going to say such a ridiculous thing? Because Shlomo understands that if the accuser's claim is accurate, then the accused wants both babies dead. And if Shlomo offers to do the job for her in the guise of justice, she'll grab it, because then she'll say, I don't have to be suspected of anything. I don't have to get involved in anything that's nefarious. I don't have to kill another baby. He's going to do it for me. What better place can I have than the king's palace to have my desires taken care of? And Shlomo tests that. And when he says, you know what, I'll cut the baby in half, and this woman says, good idea, that's the end of the road. So you understand that Shlomo's wisdom here is in his ability to understand the exact words that they say, the way that they term it, the way that they present it, to picture himself in the exact opposite situation. He's a king, and he's looking at how two zonot would be living, to put himself in that position and see, given that position, what might have happened here. He doesn't pass sentence, he tests the waters. Brilliantly, he puts a little hook out there, and she goes for it, hook, line, and sinker, and that's the end of the story. And then everybody hears this story and they understand that Shlomo is that wise, and he's then, and the promise that Hashem gave him is 100% fulfilled, that he's able to lead his people. And I think that that's the solution to this mystery of Shlomo's wisdom and Mishpat Shlomo that is our Haftarah. Remember it, because this time, by the way, it's coming up in 3 more years. But after that, I don't know how long it's going to be. So maybe even in 3 years, we'll do it again. Anyhow. All right. So, okay. In any case, I want to wish everybody a Chodesh Tov and a Chanukah Sameach and a great Shabbat.